Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on our website, on our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge.
So I have a confession to make. I love series like this. And one of the reasons I get to bring a prop, right? So it just makes it easier for me if I can do something like that. But also because it leaves an impression on you. Whenever there's a prop or something like that, you kind of associate it with something. In fact, this is always the case. Whenever I do something like this or even tell a story, a lot of times I'll ask somebody, say, so what did you get from the message Sunday? They don't remember a thing I said. But they remember the prop, right? Or they remember the story. And that's just kind of the way our mind works. This is my bag. Yeah, this is my bag. And you can tell because it has this thing on it, whatever that is. And this is something that my wife put on there so that I wouldn't lose my bag. Or so that when my bag came off the carousel, you know, off the where all the other luggage is coming down, all the other bags, you know, look like this, same color, and I could say, oh, that's my bag. That's something that I have to carry. And I'll also confess to you that doing this is strange to me. Is it to you? I mean, there's just something about, I don't know what it is, but I feel like I should carry a bag. I mean, and my wife will always get me, because I'll be doing this, and she'll say, what? It has wheels. Why are you carrying it? I don't know. It just feels like I should carry it, you know. That's just the way you're supposed to carry a bag, you know. It's not supposed to roll on its own. And but I have one now that has wheels. It rolls. My wife has one that has four wheels. Anybody got a four-wheeler? No motor on it, just four wheels, right? Okay, you have a four-wheeler. And her friend has a four-wheeler. I'm still, you know, holding out. Since I finally gave up carrying the bag, I'm not going any more than two wheels, you know. So just kind of the man in me. And we were coming back from Europe with our friends. And we were in Europe, actually. And I don't think they do this in the United States, but in one part of the airport, there's one of those moving walkways, right? You know what those are? But this one, which is different than any in the U.S., this one actually would move down, turned, went downhill, probably about 100 feet, maybe a little more than that, and then turned left. The whole thing kept moving like that. And we were late. Everybody was rushing. A friend of ours was with us, and she was up ahead of me, and she had a four-wheeler, and it was full. It was loaded. And she kind of pushes it like this by her side, and all of a sudden she hit the downhill part. And she was hanging on for dear life. I mean, it was like, it was dragging her down the moving walkway because of the four wheels. And I was just in the back. I was too far behind to help, but I was yelling, watch out, you know, because there's a bag on the loose and it's dragging a little lady, you know, behind it. So, you know, you got to watch out for things like that. Yeah, I like props because they help me illustrate and they help me remember things. And in this case, we're doing this series called Checking Your Emotional Baggage, you know, because a lot of us carry emotional bags. And I thought about this when we did the title, and I know you may look at it and think, what does that mean when it just says everyone carries? Everyone does carry. We all carry. There are two different kind of carries, though. And I know you think, are you still talking about bags? Yeah, I'm still talking about bags. There's the person who openly carries. You can see the bag. And there are people who conceal carry, right? Even with emotions, even with bags, they do. There are people that you can see them coming. You know they're angry. Oh, man, you know they're angry. Or you know that they're really feeling insecure. And they can not only carry that bag, they'll let you know because they can swing that bag around. I mean, look out, you know, just kind of like my friend going down the movable walkway. Look out, they're going to let you know the emotions that they are carrying and that they've got, and you better watch out. Sometimes they do it so that you will be afraid of them. Sometimes they just can't hide their own disappointment and their own hurt and their pain in life. And then there are other people, like I said, who can conceal carry. Any concealed carriers here? A lot of us are really good at that. We have the emotions. We have the feelings. They're there. We're just really good at making sure that no one can see it, you know, unless you just kind of push me too far. Unless they're in just the right situation, and all of a sudden, even those concealed carry emotions just sort of pop out. It's one of the reasons that marriage can be so difficult, because you can marry someone and you can kind of think, no, they don't really have any emotional baggage. I'm just telling you, I've gotten to know them. We got married, and then all of a sudden, you get married, you get over the honeymoon period, and you know what? They've got a baggage, yeah, because they have to unpack it. It's who they are. This is part of their identity. It's the stuff they carry along with them. And at some point, they've got to unpack the bag. They've got to open it up. And all of a sudden, you get to see things that you might say, whoa, I didn't know that was there. I didn't understand. My wife will tell you, she's in this service, and she'll tell you that, yeah, he's kind of a concealed carry guy. I love it. It's one time she told someone, she said, yeah, I pretty much thought he could do no wrong for the first year. Now I can do no right, just to let you know. I'm pretty much, you know, she's figured me out that it's there. I've got those same emotions, those same, you know, feelings that are pent up and they have to come out. I still have to deal with them somehow. So we're going to do a series for several weeks on dealing with those emotions, that baggage that we carry. How do you deal with it? What do you do with these things that are there? Because everybody has them, everyone carries, and everyone has to figure out how you're gonna deal with them. So here's how I want to set it up. Jesus tells stories, and they're really good, just kind of like illustrations. You remember the stories. I mean, they just kind of lock you in. You're like, oh, that's what he's talking about. Now I see. And a lot of times those stories have dual meanings. In other words, there's something physically that happens, but it also illustrates something that you need to catch, you need to get, but it's different than what you physically see. It's kind of illustrating something that really does go on, but you don't see a lot of times in your life. And I want to set it up this way, because Jesus is going to tell a story about a man who was blind from birth. So he had never been able to see. Actually, Jesus encounters blind people many times in the Bible. He heals the blind many times. It's part of a sign of who Jesus is. Isaiah the prophet, actually, when he describes the Messiah, the rescuer, the Savior that would come, it's one of the descriptions that he gives, is he will give sight to the blind. And a lot of people say, now, wait a minute, so is that just a figurative statement? Does that mean, you know, he helps people understand, he helps people get it? Yes. But in Jesus' case, actually, it also meant that he physically would give sight to people who were blind, who could not see. Now, that is also a sign, a picture of who Jesus is, so that you will recognize him and you will understand the other things that he says are actually true also, and he can do those other things also. But let me start off by saying this. In this case, this is a man, this is going to be part of the early struggle in the conversation, who has been blind from birth. I used to teach a class years and years ago called Happiness is a Choice. How many people believe happiness is a choice? Yeah, I would say that. But at the same time, let me also explain something to you. It's not always a choice. There are things that happen in our lives that we don't choose. There are things that in this case, this man was born blind. You couldn't say to him, sight is a choice, not meaning physical sight. You couldn't say that because he was born without physical sight. And sometimes we say things to people, I will say them sometimes, and say, listen, this is a choice, but it doesn't translate, because to them, where they are, what they're struggling with, the emotions that they're dealing with, the anger maybe the sense of inferiority, the sense of nobody cares, you know, sometimes those things, they aren't things they chose. They were chosen for them. Sometimes this is something that someone did to them. And so you can't tell them, That's your choice. It wasn't their choice. Now, I understand later on there are choices that you can make, you know, that whether you're going to stick with that or not. But initially, a lot of times when we say things like that, when I've said things like that, I realize, you know, I actually did more damage. Because the person looks at it and says, that's not right. That's not fair. I didn't choose this. This is not the choice that I made for life. In fact, sometimes they will say this. I want you to think about this. Do you think if I could choose that I would have chosen that? And that is a reality. Yeah. Of course they wouldn't have chosen this. If you were to say to the man born blind, so it's your choice. You think he would have say back to you, you think if I could choose whether to see or be blind, I would choose to be blind? Of course not. And in this case, it wasn't the choice that he had. You know, in this series, I'm going to sneak in stories, especially about my Chihuahua, because he's the perfect illustration. I like to talk about our new Chihuahua. He's Teddy. That's his name. And he's 2.5 pounds. He's a little brown Chihuahua, all solid brown. So, you know, he can hide really easily. And when he was born, he was born and he was loose. He was out on the street and everything. So he lived on his own. And then a man kind of found him. And the man abused him. So he wasn't kind to this little puppy, this little Chihuahua. And so Teddy is angry many times. He is. He's bitten me many times, you know. So was it his choice? No, of course it wasn't. He didn't choose to be angry. He didn't choose to be abused. He didn't choose to be taken advantage of by this person. And over time now, we've had him about 6 months. In treating him differently and in loving him, he has made a lot of changes. He really has. But as my vet will tell me, remember, his DNA, he is a Chihuahua. He is a little dog. So there's just so much he can get over. And remember his background, what he went through, right? Everybody agree? Gives us a lot more compassion, does it? So yesterday, there was a wonderful event. God just, you know, for me, God just did something that I just absolutely was so grateful for. I spent time, you know, about 30 minutes praying and thanking God for this. Teddy actually bit my wife. I know you're going to think, I got to explain it. I know. So he bites me all the time. He loves her. I mean, when he's around her, when we get up in the morning now, he's kind of gone through a new routine the last month. I get up, I feed them really early, take them out, and so then he'll, you know, come sit in my lap, and, you know, and sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he acts like I might hurt him or something like that. Lately, I feed them, and he just gets back in the bed until she gets up, you know. He could care less about me now. It's kind of like, oh, I'm just going to go back to sleep if she's not up yet. And when she gets up, he's all like, oh, yeah, let's play and let's, you know, let me come over and jump in your lap. So that's just, you know, what he's been doing lately, which is good. It's fine. But yesterday, yes, she decided to give him a bath. He has a collar on, and she has to take the collar off. He will have nothing to do with having that collar taken off. And he is biting. I mean, he is, shows those teeth. I mean, it looks like a little monster. I mean, he is aggressive. And so she cannot fix it. And she has to come over to me and she has to say, can you help me here? And so she holds him tight because he's really small. And she's holding his mouth. And then I can pinch the collar. It's one of those, you know, you pinch it and it'll pop off and take the collar off. And here's the funniest thing about it, that she's taking the collar off so that she can give him a bath. He loves his bath. Oh, my goodness. I mean, he is in Chihuahua heaven. He's in the sink, and as long as you don't pull the plug, and, you know, and then he'll go down. But, you know, as long as you don't do that and lose him, you know, he's in the warm water. And he could go forever because she's pampering him and taking care of him. He just absolutely loves his bath. But he doesn't like anybody taking the collar off, apparently. So he bit her. So it made me think, okay, I'm not the only one, right? This isn't stuff he chooses. This is stuff that, you know, it's kind of who he is and what he went through and where he is. We also have another Chihuahua. Bear is 11 years older. He's a bigger Chihuahua. He's older. He knows the ropes. We are the only thing he's ever known since I used to carry him in two of them in my hand, two baby chihuahuas, that just like that, put them in my pocket. That's how we got them. And Bear is, whenever Teddy comes up and will bite at somebody, he'll jump up against their leg. Somebody new comes over to the house. Bear jumps at Teddy and kind of bites at him and knocks him over and pushes him away. Because Bear understands something that Teddy doesn't understand, and he's trying to teach him. We have a good deal here. They feed us twice a day. We even get a snack every once in a while. We have a nice place to sleep that's warm, and they actually wash the blankets, you know, so it's fairly clean. And when it rains outside, we have a roof over our head. In fact, when it rains outside, we won't even go outside to go to the bathroom. They can't make us. We have a good deal out here. I mean, and so he doesn't want Teddy to blow the deal. And so he's trying to teach Teddy good behavior in the house. Because if you keep doing this, we might be out on the street one day, you know, if you don't change your behavior. So it doesn't mean that someone's behavior is not something they can't learn to change and that they can't adapt. It is. But it does mean that sometimes the initial reaction and why they do what they do is not something that you can really look at them and say, it's your choice. Well, it wasn't at some point. So Jesus tells this story. This is in John chapter number 9. And I love this story because it's such an illustration of the same things that you and I go through, and many times the traps that we fall into that we really shouldn't, that he tries to help us from falling into. Here's what it says in John chapter 9, verse number 1. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who was, say this with me, he was what? That means it wasn't his fault. He was blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples ask, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or because of his parents' sins? So as far as they're concerned, there are two options. There's a cause and effect. We've got to figure out who is to blame for this situation. And I put in your outline, I think this is a good understanding. This is from the Bible Knowledge Commentary. And these writers, these are professors of theology. And this is what they wrote. It's a really good explanation. They write, the disciples faced a theological problem. Believing that sin directly caused all suffering. Now, hang on. You may believe that or not. Hold on. Hang on. How could a person be born with a handicap? Therefore, either this man sinned in his mother's womb or his parents sinned. Jesus therefore answered. Here's Jesus' answer. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. What? No, it has to be one or the other. There has to be a cause and effect, Jesus. You can't say neither one sinned. These words, and here's the explanation. This is the part you need to hang on to. Look, these words do not contradict the universal sinfulness of man. They don't. Instead, Jesus meant that this man's blindness was not caused by some specific sin. Instead, the problem existed so that God could display his glory in the midst of a seeming tragedy. Here's what I want you to understand, because this is what Jesus is doing. Jesus is saying, no, there's another option to this. There's another thing that you need to look at and you need to observe. Because most of us, this is the way we are. I'm the same way. We do the cause and effect. So what we're looking for is the blame game. Who am I going to blame? Is it my fault or is it your fault? Because if it's my fault, I'm just going to feel bad about myself. I'm going to feel trapped and, man, I can't ever get over this. If it's your fault, I'm going to be angry that you did this and that you caused this. And most of the time, those are the only two options that we can come up with and we can figure out. Now, he's not saying that the struggles in our world, in our life, are not caused by sin. They are. But he's saying there is no direct cause in this case for this man's life. And part of that is for you to understand that there's somewhere else that you need to go. You need to go beyond the blame game. You've got to go beyond the blame game. And a lot of people can't do it. A lot of people just can't get past it. Can't let go of their anger. Can't let go of their pain, their hurt, their regrets. They can't let go of the things that they believe were done to them or the disappointments in their own life because of the things that they realize, I blew that. What was I thinking? And they just can't get past that. But Jesus is saying, you have to get past that. You've got to get past it. It's kind of like in Frozen, the movie, right? Let it go. Everybody with me? Let it go. Yeah, okay, yeah. Except, you know, the funniest thing, I always laugh at when I watch Frozen because when she sings Let It Go, it's kind of an angry Let It Go. I'm like, whoa, you know, she's gonna get you if you don't let it go and all. But she's right. How do you let it go? How can you get past it? See, if you just hang on to the blame game, let me take it another step further for you. You know what will not happen if you hang on to the blame game? You'll never get over the blindness. You could blame someone, but blaming someone doesn't fix the man's physical problem. In fact, blaming someone doesn't fix the man's spiritual problem either, his deeper problem. It doesn't. Now just think about that for a minute. Because if we hang on to it, I'm not saying that there is a cause and effect. I'm not saying that someone, in my case of my Chihuahua, that someone didn't take advantage of him and that's why he, you know, he bites out of fear because he was abused. I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just saying if you're going to get past it, finding who to blame doesn't fix it. It doesn't. It never fixes it. We think that it will. In fact, you know, if you go back and you look at a psychotherapy, which was kind of in vogue 150 years ago and all of the pioneering that was done, that was one of the theories behind it, is if we can just figure out who to blame and we can uncover who's really to blame, that the problem goes away. The only problem with psychotherapy in that part of the theory is it only works for a short period of time. It may make you feel good to say, oh, it was their fault for a short period of time, but it doesn't take away the problem. It doesn't deal with the emotions. It doesn't make them go away. It doesn't get you past. It doesn't bring about a cure, which is exactly what Jesus was trying to do. So here's what Jesus then says as he opens up this third option. He says, it's not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. This happened, look at this, so that the power of God could be seen in him. It's past whose fault it is. So that God could do something in him, you could see something in him that you would be stunned by and you would be amazed by, and you could not see it if you're just locked in still on the blame game. He says, and then he adds this in verse number 4, we. Now, it's interesting to me because I would have thought Jesus would say I, but in this case, Jesus says we must act, we must quickly carry out the task assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming, and then no one can work. But while I'm here in the world, I am the light of the world. You know, Jesus calls himself the light of the world. In the chapter before, he actually talks about this. But in other places, Jesus actually calls the people who follow him and believe him, he calls them the light of the world. Right, because when Jesus was here on this earth, he was the light of the world. And now all of a sudden, we become witnesses, or we become those who point toward the light of the world. So in a sense, we become the light of the world because we say, this is where you'll find what you're really looking for. Here's where you'll find the answer to your struggles and your problems. We're not the ones that should be pointing the blame game out, even though there is cause and effect, no doubt about it. There is a time where it was their fault. But that's not the miraculousness of what has happened to us and what God has given us to share. We can say, but there's a light. And the light takes away the blindness. And you don't have to live the way you lived before. And the baggage that you keep carrying with you and that no one likes to be around you because you carry it with you all the time, you can let go of the baggage because of the one who cures. He cures the blindness. He takes us on to another place. Here's what it goes on to say in the story. It says then, verse number 6, he spit on the ground. Anybody want to say, ooh? Okay, ooh, okay. It gets worse. He made mud with the saliva, the spit. Ooh. And he spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. Double. Ooh, right? Like, ooh, what are you doing? He told him, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. Siloam means sent. And the pool of Siloam, he's up near the temple, is down south in Jerusalem. And he says, so the man went and he washed and he came back still blind? No, he came back what? Seeing. His eyes had been opened. Now, physically, it's a miracle. Physically, this is just absolutely incredible. But also for you and I, this is something about who Jesus is. Not so that you would just say, if I was born physically blind, Jesus can heal me. He can. But this was so that you and I, who were not born physically blind, so that we would recognize, but we still carry about in us a blindness that He is able to get us over and to get us past. He's going to show us things. We can see things that we could not see before. And by our natural sort of inclination, our own emotions, we wouldn't go there. We would go to the blame game. But He's going to come back and say, yeah, you don't have to do that. There's a better way. There's a more effective way to deal with things in your life. Hard, it's difficult, because you are going to have to let go of some things in your life in order to accept what He's saying. But Jesus wants to take us to a different place. And then it goes and says this in the next paragraph. But the beggar kept saying, verse number 8, his neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg? Some said he was, and others said, no, it just looks like him. But the beggar kept saying, yes, it's me. I'm the one. They asked, who healed you? What happened? He told them, the man they called Jesus made mud, spread it over my eyes, and he told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. I went and washed. Now I can see. Where is he now, they asked. I don't know, he replied. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees, because see, this is a deep issue. This is a big theological problem for a lot of people, that Jesus would do something like this, especially since he's not blaming someone else. So he took him to the Pharisees because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him. The Pharisees asked the man all about it. So he told them, he put the mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man, Jesus, is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath. Others said, but how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? So there was a deep division of opinion among them. So here's the problem of the Pharisees. Jesus is a threat. Jesus can do things they can't do. In fact, the insight that Jesus has is not the same insight that we have as people. He sees things we don't see. He frees us from things that we can't free ourselves from or free each other from. But Jesus is able to do those things. And so in order to defend themselves and their position and being the spiritual, theological leaders that they were, they picked out a couple of things that they decided were wrong with Jesus, and therefore what he did was disqualified. You could not say, this is a man from God. You'd have to say, no, this is a man not from God. In fact, they even accuse him of being sent and working the will of Satan himself, the enemy himself. Here's what they pick out in the law. So in the fourth commandment, the Ten Commandments, it says, honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy, which meant they were not supposed to go and do work on the Sabbath for their own benefit. They were to take that day, they were to look to God, worship God, spend their time resting in who God was and what God Himself had done, find their significance and their strength in Him one day a week, and then the other 6 days they could go back to working and striving and making a living and all the things they normally do. But one day a week, they would come and they would remember who the Lord Himself is and how good He is to them, and that everything about life that is good has come from Him. That's what they were supposed to do. So they had taken this one commandment and they'd expanded it into over 600 rules and laws defining what it meant to work on the Sabbath. One of their definitions was, you could not make clay to make pottery out of on the Sabbath. What did Jesus do? He spit in the mud or the dust, and he made mud, clay out of it. So he must not be from God, because no one from God would make pottery clay on the Sabbath. Strangely enough, you know what they also decided you couldn't do in their laws? You couldn't heal anybody on the Sabbath. Like there are people doing that all the time, right? You know, they're walking around, right? You couldn't heal anybody on the Sabbath. And Jesus says this, and other people said the same thing. They're like, now hang on here. What are we talking about? He's an evil, wicked man, can't be from God, because there's a blind man, and Jesus causes the man to see, and it's the Sabbath. Don't you think about it for a minute. Don't you think that would have been the perfect day to do it? I would say yes. Even Jesus said, listen, my Father is always at work. He works on the Sabbath, and he does. Even what Jesus did was proof that the Father was working on the Sabbath. He was freeing a man on the Sabbath. He was trying to free us. What we see, how we understand life, our blindness that gets us all messed up and causes us to miss the things of God, because we're just caught up in the things of us so many times on the Sabbath. And they see Jesus differently. They understand him differently. There's a guy in the New Testament named Paul. His original name was Saul. He was from the town of Tarsus. And Paul was one of these Pharisees. I mean, he was an angry man. If you read his stories, Paul turned his anger into vengeance. And he went everywhere trying to find people, it says in Acts, who were followers of the way. That's what they called it. Remember, Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. So they were looking for people who were followers of the way, and he would go get them and he would bring them back. He had letters from the religious leaders. He would bring them back to Jerusalem for trial so that they could be persecuted and they could be eliminated from the culture. And Paul, for him, this anger just fueled him. It's who he was. And in Acts chapter number 9, you'll see the story where Paul is on his way to Damascus with some letters to go pick up some more. And all of a sudden, Paul encounters Jesus for the first time. Never seen him before, never met him before. But on that road, Jesus appears to him. Jesus has already been resurrected and gone back into heaven. But Jesus appears to him, and the strangest thing happens. Paul ends up in that encounter, you know, blind. Can't see. And so they have to lead him to Damascus, his friends. And it says that they heard something, but they didn't see what happened either. So they lead him there. After 3 days, it says that Paul eats nothing, he drinks nothing. He's in prayer because he's trying to figure out what is going on. He's had this encounter. And a man named Ananias is told to go visit Paul. He said, he's waiting for you. Ananias says in his prayer back to God, no. I know who this is. I've heard of him before. I'm not going and messing with him. This is a dangerous man. Boy, he wields that emotional anger. There's no telling what kind of trick this would be. But he goes anyway, and Ananias is the one who goes, and Paul regains through him his sight. He saw again. Now, don't you think that made an impression on Paul after 3 days? Not just physical sight, but Paul realizes, I was seeing everything the wrong way. In fact, Paul changes in the most dramatic way. Rather than being an angry man looking for blood, looking for destruction, going about with this, in his view, righteous anger that he was going to destroy as many as he could, Paul becomes a man with a total opposite purpose in his life. In fact, Paul spends his life, and you read his later letters, and Paul's one direction in life, his final direction, is that he believes that God has told him he will make it all the way to Rome, and he will testify to the king of the world at that time who was in Rome. And Paul knows God will fulfill this and will take him there, and Paul's one drive, his one direction, is to get to Rome to tell his story before the Caesar, you know, in Rome. And it's so much so that Paul is willing to sacrifice everything to get there, and sure enough, when Paul gets there, it's the end of Paul's life, and he is excited about it. He's rejoicing about it. Totally different man who's chasing everybody else around to hurt them, than to go with this one passion in life, to go and share the story of who Jesus Christ was. In fact, Paul writes a letter to a group of people in Philippi. It's called the Book of Philippians. Great, great book in the Bible, New Testament, if you haven't read it. 4 chapters. And in the 3rd chapter, Paul sort of is getting near the end of his letter, and he says this. He says, this one thing that I do. I don't know if you've ever read this before. There's one thing I do, and it's not one thing, but that's what he says. There's one thing I do, but it kind of has steps in it. I want you to grab this. One thing I do, he says, forgetting what? What lies behind forgetting what lies behind, and reaching out to what's coming, I press on. Forgetting what lies behind, letting it go. You can sing Frozen if you want to. Let it go. Let it go. You won't fix anything this way. No one gets healed this way. They get hurt. No one gets healed this way. I'm not saying there isn't blame. I'm not saying people, but if you hang on to that, listen, you'll be 30 or 40 years later still carrying the same emotional baggage. It just weighs you down. It makes life so tough. When Jesus himself came to say, you can let it all go, Paul lets it go, forgetting what lies behind. He says, I press on. I reach forward to what's ahead. And I know you may think, well, that was a strange thing to, oh, no, it wasn't. He was so set free. This wasn't strange at all that was his reaching ahead. Jesus says, this is in Matthew chapter 11, that I'll get it to pop up on the screen. Read this with me. This is Matthew chapter 11. Here we go. There it is, verse 28. Jesus said this, come to me, who? All who are weary, carry what? Anybody there? Weary, carrying heavy burdens. I'm tired of carrying all this. I'm tired of having to drag all this around. He says, and I will give you what? Rest. And then he adds this. He says, take my yoke upon you. And I don't mean you think, now, whoa, now, wait a minute. What is he talking about? Because this is part of it. Yes, take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Wow. Now, if you understand in their day what a yoke was, if you've ever been around, you know, animals and wagons and things like that, so a yoke is something that you put on an animal, and it's used to attach to something to pull it, usually a wagon in their day or something like that. But many times what they would do is they'd take the yoke and they would attach two animals together, because the two animals could pull a whole lot more than the sum of the two individuals. There's just some kind of strength in who they were. And so Jesus is using a very vivid example for them, maybe not as vivid for us. And most of us would think, no, I want to get rid of my yoke, get rid of my burdens. That's what he says. Bring me your yoke, your burden, the things that are weighing you down and hold you down. Bring them to me. Let me take those from you. And then take my yoke upon you, because my yoke is easy. My yoke is light. You will like this yoke. It's a different identity. It's letting go of this stuff. And all of a sudden, your new identity is in him and who Jesus is. That's light. It's freeing. All of a sudden, the things that you learn that you do are not how to manage this and carry this around, even though that's part of life, I understand. But you'll learn a whole new view of life, a whole new language in life, a whole new vision of life with other people around you because of who Jesus is and because of the rest that Jesus wants to bring you and others around you. It's entirely different. Entirely different because of who he is. So let me ask a question. What are you carrying around? Because we all are. We're all carriers, right? We're either open carriers, you can see it, or some of us are concealed carriers. You know, we got it hidden pretty well, but it's still there. Still a burden. Still something that, you know, we struggle with, that we wish, if there was an answer, I sure wish there was an answer. If I could let go of this, oh, you know I'd let go. You think I'd hold onto this if I could? Well, okay, wait a minute. Maybe there is an answer. What if Jesus Christ really did come so that you don't have to carry all that stuff around, but instead you could switch from this yoke, this burden, to a different yoke that is not a burden at all? There's a whole new way of understanding who God is and who you are. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we thank you. You didn't come to add to our burden and to our struggle. Instead, you made it pretty clear that you have come to set us free. And the truth is, in our own way and how we look at things and how we do things, it's pretty hard for us. We usually get it mixed up. We spend a lot of time looking to blame others and sometimes even looking in the mirror and blaming ourselves, only to find nothing improves, nothing gets better. When you came to change how we would see ourselves, all because of who you are, and the things that you can do, which none of us could do, because you do miraculous things. If you're here this morning, carrying some burdens, carrying things, and boy, if you could just believe that you really could take them to Him, lay them at His feet, that Jesus would take these burdens from you, the pain, the insecurity, frustration, the regret, the anger in life, that Jesus really does say, bring them and give them to me. And here, let me give you some things that are not nearly as difficult to carry. In fact, they will be incredibly freeing for you, life-giving for you. And Jesus is the one who gives them. In His name we pray.